I do also.
I'm showing 10 participants. Is that accurate?
Yep. Yep. Okay. That's what I've got. I don't see Tom or Don, however.
Okay.
But Jim is with us.
Okay. Well, I think we'll get started and hopefully Tom. Jim, do you know if Tom's going to join us?
Yes, Tom is. Tom and Don both are scheduled to join.
Okay, perfect. Well, we'll get started anyway. Good morning, all. Happy Monday after a holiday. Hopefully we're all rested. Sorry for picking the date after a holiday. as posted, this is, we'd scheduled, this is supposed to be our annual meeting, albeit a couple of days early, because we thought it'd be good to get the update from Tom Kirk and try to do this all in one meeting. And the first item on the agenda is the public comment. And I'm not sure if anybody is here from the public, but I'll entertain somebody if they are. Is anybody from the public on, Kim, that you're aware of?
Nope.
Okay, seeing none, we'll move ahead. Hopefully you should have got your agenda that Kim sent out. I'll look for a motion to accept the minutes from the October 29th, 2020 meeting, which was the last meeting we have, and you all should have a copy of them, hopefully. Anybody want to move that?
I'll make that motion. It's Joe Doering.
Okay. Anybody for a second on the minutes of October 29th?
Josh Kelly, I'll second.
Okay. Any comments on the minutes? I didn't see anything. Hearing none, motion to accept or vote to accept, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Opposed? Okay, they did pass. Next item on the agenda, if Tom is here, otherwise we'll move on, is the update from Mira. As you're aware, at the last meeting, we had quite a discussion on trying to figure out where we're at with the state and the Connecticut Coalition for Sustainable Materials moving on, and a report tentatively scheduled to be done by the end of December. And I'm sure, you know, most of the towns out there like Glastonbury are kind of looking for what's happening and what we're doing and what Mira might be doing since the last time we met with Tom. And as you know, Tom's been coming to a number of our meetings, giving us updates right along. But with all the stuff going on more recently, we thought it'd be a good idea to get him on here. So we did coordinate a meeting for him to join us this morning. And I'm not sure if he's on yet.
Yeah, I don't see him on. If you know, want to move to the other business, and I'm texting both him and Don. So,
okay, let's do that. We had added the item we added on the agenda. Our bylaws say that we're supposed to have an annual meeting in December. Obviously, today's not December. So, in discussions with Kim, if I can get a consensus this morning, if we can consider this our annual meeting instead of having this meeting to get the Mira update, which is really the primary item on the agenda, rather than have another meeting later on in the month, we thought it'd be, you know, prudent just to, unless we all want to join each other again on a Zoom meeting in a few more weeks. So I'd look to entertain a motion to consider this our annual meeting in lieu of having the meeting later on in December per our bylaws.
Russ Arnold Farmington, move the motion.
Josh Kelly from Bolton, I'll second.
Okay, any discussion on that? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, hearing none. Okay, so this will be our annual meeting. So the next item we have on the agenda, if we did, well, since this is our annual meeting, would have been, or is our executive committee election of officers. And right now, hopefully I've got this slate right. I went back to look for my notes. Mike Beasley is chair, Mike Looney is vice chair, Josh Kelly secretary, and John Ward is treasurer. And I think, yeah, that should be correct, which was from the election of last year. My thought was we didn't have a nomination committee. We can certainly accept nominations from the floor, but my thought would be if the group is all willing to continue with the same slate, especially in light of the fact that we might be going into hiatus anyway, so I don't see a whole lot of stuff going on. It would be simpler, obviously, to do it that way. Otherwise, we can certainly hold an election of officers later on if we want to get a slate. So that was my thought. And before we even throw that out there, I just want to open up for discussion if somebody's got any questions or somebody certainly wants to step up and move into one of these executive committee roles. But that was kind of my thought, and it's more a personal thing, but then I haven't thrown it out to the group, so I'll entertain any discussion on that if you want.
Mike Russ from Farmington, if everyone's willing to do the same duties, I'm all for it and keep moving forward.
Any other comments? Well, hearing none, what I'll do is, I'll just put the slate on as I indicated, and I'll mention it again, and we'll look for a motion for the existing slate of Mike Bizai as chairman, Mike Looney as vice chairman, Josh Kelly, secretary, John Ward as treasurer, and I'll look for a motion for that slate.
So moved, Russ Arnold, Farmington.
In a second, anybody?
Second, Tom Roy, Simsbury.
Okay, any discussion? Okay, hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Well, that was almost unanimous, better than the other votes we had earlier. Okay, well, I thank everybody for serving. I think Mike and Josh are both on. I'm not sure about John Ward. We'll let him know later. The other action item we had was the 21-22 budget. As we, again, normally do at our annual meeting, we put a budget forth for the upcoming fiscal year or the upcoming year, calendar year for us. Kim and I had some discussion on this, and again, it's open for more discussion from the group. But one of them was not knowing what's really going to happen henceforth. One of the discussions was to leave the budget as status quo for the upcoming year. There is money in there if we needed to act on something, if something comes up. On the other hand, if we were looking for a hiatus, one of the thoughts was, do we suspend dues for the upcoming year, not knowing what's going on? And that again is open to the group. So the budget, as we see it, could retain as it is. We would still keep the dues the same or suspend dues for the upcoming year. That was one of the thoughts. And I just want to get a sense from the group, because I know there's probably a lot of towns that have been questioning what the group is doing per se. So that's why it's been suggested to consider the fact that if we suspended dues for a year until the dust settles out, is that something wise to do? So I'm just going to throw that out on the floor.
Mike, how are we doing financially?
Kim, do you have the budget in front of you?
I'm going to ask Pauline to pop in on that one.
So it's a very healthy balance, because no money has been spent for the last, except a very small amount of staff time. I would say it's so there's, I believe there's like $80,000 in sort of the, what I would call the war chest. Sorry, I'm not looking at my camera. I just realized I'm looking at you on my screen. So I'd have to look to verify the exact number, but there's a healthy balance in the in that. I'll look it up right now.
Do we have any towns that haven't paid yet or that owe money? I know a couple of years ago we were having an issue with that.
I believe all the towns are paid up. We don't have any outstanding balances. Outstanding. So there was one town that withdrew but didn't inform us that they withdrew. And they were the ones that were in arrears. And so so that has been resolved.
Well, I believe they paid, yeah.
Well, I guess my thought is, if not knowing where we're going to be and what's going on with everything with Deep, I would offer up with that kind of money in the bank that we, you know, we forego next year's budget, unless you guys feel differently, and see where we're at, with the understanding that we are still a consortium, we are still a group, and if we need to pay our dues next year, we pay our dues. Or we pay them anyway. I don't know. You know, I'm good either way.
Yeah, are any towns getting flack, I guess, for lack of a better word, considering that we're not, that was my only thing that I had thought I'd sensed some rumbles about, you know, what are we getting? So I thought, would it make sense? And I don't have any problem. I mean, financially, the dues aren't a big thing in the budget. And I don't think it's a big, if we did forego them, is anybody going to have heartburn if we institute them again and somebody says, well, where did these come from? So that's one of the things. But there is enough money, and not knowing where we're going, we could run into something where if we did have to do an RFP or do something, obviously we need some money. So that's the other thing. But by no means is this, you know, indicating that CSWA is going to cease to exist, because it was a lot of effort for some of you that are aware that go back a little in time to put this group together. So I wouldn't want to disband, because the thought of putting it back together again or a similar group is daunting, and I don't think any of us would rather go through that again.
No, I agree, Mike. I don't think, I wasn't suggesting that we disband at all. I think we keep moving and keep going forward and stay together. I just, you know, and the money isn't an issue here either. I don't know if it is for other towns, but whatever the group decides as a group, I'm good either way.
I would agree to, you know, definitely. I don't think if we have, you know, a substantial board chest, I think we're in good shape. The one thing I might suggest is that we keep some small annual dues just so it stays as a line item in all of our budgets and nobody just simply forgets about it.
Yeah, that was kind of my thought as well, to keep something. And I guess if we're going to do that, if people aren't having an issue with it, you know, we could leave the dues the way they are, and the budget just remains. There's nothing, you know, the items would remain flat. You know, nothing would change as far as the budget goes, if that makes sense.
I agree.
Okay.
So I guess a motion, if somebody wants to make it, would be to the dues remain as they are. There's no changes in the budget. The budget remains flat. Is that where we'd go for a motion?
I'm good with that, Mike. I make that motion that the yearly dues remain flat going for right now and reassess as needed.
Okay, anybody for a second?
Hold on a second, Matt.
Okay, motion and a second. Tony Manfrey seconded it I see him on the screen here. So we had a motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, so that's completes that. Anybody got a word on Tom?
No, but Don Stein is on, so if you wanted to proceed, you know, Don as the chair and me as a board member, be glad to hear.
I texted Tom, but I haven't heard back from him, so.
Okay, Don, are you okay to give us kind of an update? That works?
It won't be quite as technical or as detailed as Tom might be, but.
That's okay.
Between Jim and I, we should be able to cover it.
Okay, Don Stein is chairman of the Merrill Board, for those that might not. No. And Jim Hayden has been on the board for some time. So I'm sure between both of them, they can give us an update. And again, I appreciate you coming back on. This is something that the group wanted to get folks together to find out where Mira is in light of all the stuff going on with Deep. So with that, I'll give it to you, Don. Thank you.
Well, this is not planned, so it's going to be sort of off the cuff, and Jim can jump in anytime he wants or add. But basically, Mira is committed to providing service through 2027 through the term of the contracts. I mean, that's a given. The question, and there's a lot of unknowns here, so I can't give you a definitive answer, is going to be how that service will be performed. You know, in an ideal world, we could put $5 or $10 million a year into that plan and keep it running for the next 5-6 years, but we don't have a lot of confidence in that. So we had started down a path where we were going to go become a transfer station. The objective obviously was to take municipal trash and dispose of it in the most environmentally sound manner we could. But if the plant can't survive that long, the only option we saw was to create a transfer station, and either truck or, if you looked at a long-term issue, you might talk about putting a rail spur in there. But right now what we're looking at doing is keeping the plant alive as long as we can do it feasibly. At that point, we will use the 3 transfer stations that we own, as well as, you know, the Hartford facility, and we will provide trucking to New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania landfills. That's not desirable, but in at least in the short to medium term, we don't see a lot of options. We've participated in some of the commissioners' sessions, and then I realized it was taking all day, every day to, you know, there were so many different subgroups, and I don't know if any of you participated in those. But what she's doing, and I think it's the right thing, is she's trying to come up with a long-term strategy for the state, because the idea of trucking waste out of state to landfills was something that was determined, not something the state could condone when Dick Barlow headed up the solid waste division 15, 20 years ago. So we're hopeful that there will be some good output from the commissioners group. We're skeptical that even if they implement all the organics separation, that they implement more producer requirements for things like, you know, that they are already set up, like paint and other, you know, mattresses, et cetera. The paper throw is getting a lot of press. And I know that if you look at Worcester, you look at Portland, Maine, you look at a lot of the communities, paper throw, they claim is very effective. But I think when you take everything in total, it's going to be very hard to have zero waste disposal, waste treatment at the South Meadows facility. It may not have to be the same size it is now, but at some point, even if you go to Europe, to Germany, to places that are, you know, very, very efficient, they still use waste energy as being the most environmentally friendly of the various technologies beyond, again, organic separation, anaerobic digestion, things of that sort. As far as pricing, we know there'll be a price increase, a tipping fee increase this year. I don't know the exact figure yet. We're still working on the budget. Over the next 5 years, it could be significant, depending on what the final short-term strategy is. And so I guess the only thing I can leave you with is there's a lot of unknowns right now, but the commitment is there to dispose of the waste. We're going to do it in the most cost-effective manner we can. We've talked about putting $10 or $15 million a year in the budget to keep that plant facility like your old jalopy. But, you know, we don't necessarily have a lot of confidence that that is feasible to keep it operating for the next 6 years. So I wish I could be more definitive, but I don't think we have the data right now. The commitment is, obviously, we have to let you know what the tip fee will be by February, or, you know, a final tip fee. But it will go up several dollars compared to this year. What that exact figure is, I can't really quote it to you right now. Jim, you want to add anything to that?
One of the things that those of you who have followed this process for a while understand, that there's been subsidies, in place that have helped keep the cost down. So it was the cost of energy that was created by the trash plant, trash to electricity plant, and that helped keep the rates down, so the tipping fee down. So what's happened is those the ability to do that when the energy market, the prices went, you know, 7-8 years ago the price was $13.13 a kilowatt, and you know now it's two and change. So that subsidy is gone to the tip fee. The another one is, that is going to be going is on the jets. So there's jets down there on the in the meadows. And there's an agreement with ISO New England where there's standby dollars, several million dollars that is given for the excess capacity if it's ever needed. The ability to do the jets is going to be gone next year into 22. So, you know, and these things are $5 or $10 per tipping fee ton increments. So the longer we go on with this, the more expensive it gets because of the fact that the plant is outdated and old and needs repair. And the subsidies that were there in place no longer in place. So we anticipate that we will still be in the 90s with the tipping fee, but it will go up.
The other thing that we should mention, as everybody knows, the market for recyclables has just dropped off the chart, so that, you know, what used to be something you can make a little money at or break even at is a fairly expensive proposition now. And as you know, our contracts, sometimes it's referred to as socialized fees, but in any case, all of the towns where we're members pay the same amount of money, which includes transportation, it includes obviously the solid waste facility, includes recycling. So that even though there's been a change in the recyclables market, you know, the tip fee reflects the contract we have in Hartford right now, which is expiring the end of the year. So we will need a new vendor for disposing of recyclables. And the expectation is that that's going to cost significantly more than it's costing right now. That it still won't, you still won't be charged directly for your recyclables, but the cost of getting rid of recyclables or recycling material will be included in the tip fee. So that, in addition to what Jim mentioned, the low dollars per kilowatt that we can sell electricity at, the expiration of the jets with ISO New England, and the additional cost of disposing of recyclables, you know, will add to the cost to the tip fee. And like Jim said, this coming year will probably still be in the 90s, but over the next 5 or 6 years, it's going to go up year by year until we can come up with a long-term solution that's more economically viable. And even when you add up organics and producer responsibility and, you know, better recycling and pay per throw, unless you can actually diminish the total amount of solid waste that's generated, you know, it's very hard to, you know, really reduce the cost. And there's some question is when you go to pay per throw, whether you actually reduce the solid waste that's generated or you just move it in different directions. So there's more unknowns out there right now than there are answers. Everybody's pictures on the screen looks pensive, so we'll entertain questions.
Okay, we'll open up.
I'll jump in real quick, and I appreciate everybody's effort on this. I know this is a thankless task of trying to get everybody's trash taken care of. Have there been any more efforts at the state legislature in order to see if they're going to see the benefit of this to the state as a whole and look to contribute, or is this going to be we're all on our own?
It's a great question. I mean, we've talked to the commissioner. Tom, I know you know one of the people involved in this quite well, Mary Glassman.
Yep.
In her role with the governor's office now, she's, you know, working with the communities. Jonathan Harris, who was mayor of West Hartford several years ago, is also involved. So the people in the governor's office are certainly very familiar with MIRA and with, you know, what it takes to dispose of solid waste. So we've been talking to Mary, we've been talking to Jonathan, the commissioner right now has shown no appetite for going to the legislature to fund a new waste energy facility. What her legislative program is going to be when the the current study is complete, I really don't know, but I'm sure it's going to have elements of a lot of different technologies. And what she asked the legislature to do is really the unknown, whether she's going to look for a bunch of $50,000 or $5 million contracts or subsidies. You know, she knows that to put the South Meadows facility back fully online is about a $300 million proposition. And between the governor's office and the commissioner, there's no interest in funding that level of refurb or rebuild. So in terms of the legislative platform, I assume something's going to come out of the study, the commissioner's study, but I don't know what that's going to look like. And then in this economic climate, how much the legislature is going to be willing to put into solid waste versus transportation versus steep grants versus LOSIP, et cetera. You know, the unknowns are not just with our planning. The unknowns go all the way to Hartford and to the state capitol. But it's clear they're not going to stake near to the $300 million. The other question is, if you look out 5-6 years, what is MIRA's role going to be long-term? Right now, MIRA started out when it was CRRA as a statewide agency, as a statewide arm of DEEP for solid waste education, for solid waste disposal, even though it was focused on its member towns. And now when they revised the charter and they created MIRA out of CRA, basically all we were able to do is to really dispose of solid waste. They took the education away. We don't service anything more than our 51 towns. And so there's some question, I believe, in the commissioner's mind as to what MIRA's long-term role should be. And there's some question in our mind. You know, after 2027, does MIRA exist? Does MIRA's charter change again? You know, it's very hard to picture where we're going to be in 5-6 years just based on all the unknowns at Hartford. And again, Jim, whenever you want to add anything, feel free.
Well, what's really difficult with this whole process is instead of it being a statewide mandate from the legislature and the governor's office on what trash, should the future of the trash disposal is and should be, it's not, there's not an overriding strategy. And like Don said, there's no appetite to do so at this point. I've been participating on most of the breakout sessions for the unit pricing and also the, you know, the other meetings, a couple other meetings I've been trying to make sure that I attend. And that's, to me, is the big thing. This is bubbling up instead of bubbling down. And trash strategy, you need to have bubble down. It's kind of, that's how it was successful 35, 40 years ago. And by the way, it worked for over 30 years. It was a great solution for a generation, a couple generations. And my concern is that there's not an overarching strategy being driven by the legislature and by the governor's office. And if that's the case, I understand, you can take food waste out of the mix. You can put things in different colored bags and charge for it. But the pricing on that isn't necessarily the issue. The issue is that, okay, what you're taking is you're taking with the bags is the tipping fee will be paid by the bags. Well, none of our residents trust all of us enough to make sure that money goes back to them. It will just go somewhere else is what the concern is. So there's not a lot of buy-in on that. And it's an education process. And like, you know, I've got into these things with an open mind and I've learned a lot. But with that said, the predominant comment that I have is it needs to be an overall strategy. It's not. And MIRA is going to go away presently by 2027 after the contractual obligations are there. I think MIRA or an entity like it has certainly has benefit, but at this point there needs to be an overarching strategy and commitment of dollars and resources that's not there. And by the way, I'm like everybody else. I mean, I read the paper yesterday, and they're projecting next year's budget to be a $2.5 billion deficit. So, you know, and we're in the COVID-related issues, and, you know, taxes eventually going to be down, and all that. So, well, receipts are going to be down. So anyways, those are basically my comments adding on to what Don said.
Yeah, the one thing that you might want to do, and I don't know when you're going to meet again, I gather you're not sure either, but Mike Payne, I think, is still president of the Haulers Association. And whatever comes out of this activity, again, whether it's unit-based pricing, whether it's organic separation at the curb, et cetera, this has an impact on the haulers, because when they first announced a deal with a company that did organics processing that will do curbside pickup, Dick Barlow called them to see what it would cost him to, in addition to having Payne's pick up his municipal trash, he separated out his organics. And it was about, I forget the exact number, but a 40 or 50% increase in his monthly cost. If he's paying $45 right now, I think the organics pickup was 30 or 35. So until you went to a unit-based pricing, so that if he was diverting organics and you had less municipal solid waste, you know, it's a significant cost increase to your taxpayers, or if you don't subsidize trash pickup to, you know, the people who are contracting with Payne's or the others. But if you're going to have another meeting, it might be worth at some point having Mike Payne or somebody from the Haulers Association come in and talk about their vision, because unit-based pricing complicates how they do business. Organic separation complicates how they do business, et cetera. So, you know, the unknowns aren't just with Mirror, it's with the entire state, it's with the trash haulers. And we know that in Southwest Connecticut, Fairfield County area, they're already shipping several thousand tons a week, or, you know, about, I forget the exact figure, but there's a significant amount of waste being shipped out of state already, which is in opposition to the state solid waste plan, but DEEP has chosen not to clamp down on the Fairfield County folks and, you know, who are shipping out of state. But I would recommend also getting the hauler, you know, having a conversation with Mike Payne about what he sees the future. I've talked to him. He has called Dick Barlow also. And Tom, I assume you have a pretty good relationship with him. Just, you know, it's a Simsbury business. Yeah. Is he still a selectman?
He is.
Okay, well, that so he has some skin in the game that way, too. Yeah. Any other questions?
Don.
Or have we depressed you enough? What's up, Mike?
Converting to a transfer station, the Mirror facility, and I know financially it's certainly a lot less than the $300+ million. Any kind of projection on what that might cost to change it, to convert that over?
If it's just a truck transfer station, I think the numbers are more like 30 to 40 million.
Okay.
So about 10%. If it was going to go to a full rail spur, obviously that adds a significant amount of cost, but right now there's no stomach in Hartford. And really for us to do that, it would have to be a long-term commitment that, you know, we don't know what long-term looks like right now. So right now, if we're a truck transfer station, and we'd also take advantage of Torrington and the other transfer stations so that not everything would have to come into Hartford, but what comes into Hartford, we'd have to set it up. And we don't want a lot more trucks on the road. Nobody does. You know, you don't want the pollution from diesel trucks heading west, you know, round trips every day. But, you know, based on the reliability of the plant and the unexpected outage we had a year and a half ago, you know, we're not optimistic about keeping this plant going for the next 6 years without a significant infusion of money. And even then there's unknowns.
And are you hearing any pressure? I know there's obviously a lot of pressure on a burn plant in the city, and Hartford would love to have that property back. As far as the feasibility of actually putting a transfer station there, as far as the city's concerned.
That's a hard question to answer. As far as building another burn plant there, the environmental justice folks in the mayor's office, they are definitely opposed to another burn plant going there. Whether they would tolerate a transfer station, right now we think we have the permits to do it. We think we could do it without going through a long, tedious process. But I think, you know, it's clear the environmental justice want it gone from Hartford. It's clear that the mayor, you know, when he puts his 30-year crystal ball in place, would like to see that become a nice riverfront recreation, high-end community, docks for boats, et cetera. You know, whether that's feasible or not, you know, we know that the cost of cleaning up that site could get expensive. We think most of it's contained, but you know, anytime you take down a facility like the Mirror facility and you want to redevelop it for residential or recreational, you know, there's a lot of environmental investigation that would have to take place. But so Mike, there is opposition, whether it's something that would shut us down and leave us holding the bag. I don't think so, but there's certainly unknowns in that regard.
Understood.
There perhaps would be less regulatory problems with just a regular transfer station as opposed to a rail station for taking the garbage out.
Yeah, I think just a side comment for those of us that have been in this business a while, unless the state has legislation passed to make towns do pay as you throw, That's a heavy lift. I'm just speaking on behalf of Glastonbury because we've been there a few times at our transfer station, and it's just politically it's DOA, and unless the state wants to mandate that, I don't see it happening.
Well, what's interesting, and I don't know the exact motivation, is Torrington tried very hard a couple of years ago to implement pay per throw, and it failed miserably. So one of the co-chairs of the pay per throw, the unit-based pricing committee, is the mayor of Torrington, Eleanor Carbone. And so I find it interesting that she feels strongly enough about it that she's involved in the study as the chair of that subcommittee. But there was some sense we got originally that DEP thought the Mirror could legislate things like paper throw. And we're pretty convinced that's outside the scope of what we can do as an organization, possibly for our 51 customers, but certainly not as a statewide initiative. And we agree with you that unless the state mandates it, it's very unlikely that it's going to carry a whole bunch of towns. And every town is different. I mean, Barkhamsted is different than East Granby, is different than Granby, is different than Glastonbury. So, you know, some things that might work in a small town won't work in a big community, and vice versa.
And I think at the end of the day, we can all agree that, you know, regardless, and I think I remember Mayor Bronin's comment at the meeting we all had at the Capitol was, you know, the pay as you throw, and, you know, you wouldn't need the trash facility there. But at the end of the day, let's be realistic. There's going to be something you got to get rid of, and it's going to go either to a landfill or an incinerator somewhere in the U.S. So, you know, we can, and it's fine to look at, and I think this group's going to do, hopefully, a good job at reducing or finding ways to reduce trash even more. Some of us, I think, have probably, you know, are already there, but at the end of the day, there's still going to be something to get rid of. And whether you need a $300 million trash energy plant or $200 million trash energy plant, it's got to go somewhere. So it is, it's a quandary we've all had. And I really appreciate you folks keeping in touch with us, you know, the whole group. And obviously, as I think I've mentioned before, we're all here to do what we can, but I think that horse has already left the barn. I don't think there's little that we can do at this point except for wait for this report to come out at the end of December. And I'm not sure what that's gonna look like, if it's just gonna outline ways that we can all reduce waste, or is it gonna, you know, do that? And then also say, here's some of the alternatives that we're looking at, because time has been of the essence in the last 2 years. Sadly, I think have been kind of wasted at, you know, spinning wheels and getting nowhere as far as the RFP and selecting vendors, and we're back to kind of where we were 2+ years ago. But that's my personal opinion, not CSWA's.
No, I think that's well stated, Mike. I think that we don't know, you know, what's going to come out of the study. I'm sure it's going to be a recommendation, whether it's mandated or recommendation for unit-based pricing. I think that's pretty clear. I think there's going to be some sort of mandate for organics, but whether it's curbside pickup in the rural communities for organics, or it's limited to institutions, restaurants, you know, grocery stores, you know, that much I don't know. No towns are stepping up saying, I want a burn plant in my backyard. You know, that, you know, if you did that in Glastonbury, you might get some resistance or any of the other towns around. So the only logical place to put something in place right now is the South Meadows, which is permitted. But we do know that the environmental justice people are working really hard to prevent anything from happening. And they'd like to see it shut down tomorrow. You know, not just don't replace it, but shut it down permanently. And they haven't really addressed how you get rid of the waste, but there was one of the presentations that was made to the, I can never remember how many C's and S's are in it, but one, the subcommittee on environmental justice, there was a presentation. I don't know, Jim, if you were on that or not, but there was a gentleman who basically said that landfilling is preferable to anything as far as a way of disposing of trash. And that caught everybody on the call by surprise. I think Deep was flabbergasted that one of their invited guests came out with that, you know, perspective. So, you know, what's mandated, what's recommended, what changes are really going to be able to take hold without a statewide mandate is the unknown.
Anybody else?
I got some comments. I've been involved with those, with the meetings that Deep's had with the, you know, pay as you throw, and then the organics and the clothing. We did the clothing reduction here in town about a little over a year ago, and we reduced our tonnage by 4 tons. We collected 4 tons of clothing, and it works all right. It's just like anything else; it has its ups and downs, but. You know, in the big scheme of things, 4 tons is not a lot. That's after over a year of work. And it is what it is, and I'm fine with it. But you listen to some of these meetings, and it's, you know, like Don just said, that the environmental justice, they just want a landfill, or they just want to shut the thing down, but there's no alternative to what we're going to do with our trash. And the trash is coming. It's not staying. It's not disappearing. And as you said, Mike, at that meeting in Hartford, about a year ago, where Mayor Browning said, oh, we're prepared to go to pay as you throw. We're going to have hardly any garbage. I want to see that happen there. And I agree with pay as you throw is going to be hard here in Farmington. We tried it 12 years ago. We talked about it when we went to the automated garbage carts. And it was, you know, you might as well just, you know, hung me from the street pole. People do not want to do it. And it's, to me, it's, everyone thinks that this, you know, pay as you throw is a great thing, but they're not the ones actually on the ground implementing it, being the front line. I've had conversations. We had a meeting here a handful of years ago with, I forget the gentleman's name from Worcester, along with Bob Eisner. He came to the meeting, and he lives here in Farmington. And I asked him, I said, well, you should be the face of the program here in town. You're a resident. He's like, oh, no, that's up to you guys. They want to, it's just, to me, it's frustrating because this whole thing is designed by committee, but there's no true answer. And I think this report that's going to come out is going to be, well, the committee says that we're going to do pay as you throw, and it's not going to be really mandated per se by the state coming up with the idea. They're going to push it all back on and everyone who attended this thing signed up for it. And like, it's the best thing since sliced bread, but they aren't going to be the ones implementing it. And that's where our struggles are going to be. Having to implement it, and myself, I'm thinking I'm going to need to hire 2 or 3 or 4 people for our 11,000 residential pickups to make sure that everyone's following the rules. Because what happens when we go to pay as you throw, and what happens if people still go to Costco or BJ's and buy the big box of garbage bags and they're not the right color, or they don't have Town of Farmington or Glastonbury or Simsbury or East Granby on it? What are you going to do then? And how does that all work? And Don, as you mentioned before, the impact on the haulers. I've had conversations with Waste Material Trucking Company, who's our hauler, and there's going to be a significant cost for them. You know, if we go to pay as you throw, they're going to have to put weight measuring devices on their trucks, more, you know, cameras, everything. So the pay as you throw is going to, the potentially save money in, you know, the long run, but the upfront costs are going to be significant. But I still have a concern personally with allowing other states to dictate and mandate how we're going to get rid of our trash, meaning they're in control of what we'd send them. What if New York or Pennsylvania or Ohio says, we're done taking trash from Connecticut? What do we do then? If we're not independent with it, we're at somebody else's mercy. And that, to me, is troubling. But that's just my personal two cents.
One thing I didn't mention is we authorized the board. The board authorized the mirror management to try a pilot program. There are, I believe it's 19 communities who pay for 100% of their trash pickup as part of their tax base for their residents. So the residents are not paying for private haulers. So we reached out to them to see if they wanted to do a pilot program for paper throw in a community like that, where, you know, they would have to set up a, you know, way of making sure that the bags they pick up were the authorized bags, et cetera, et cetera. But I haven't heard back yet how many towns opted to do that as a trial to see how effective it would be, because basically the hope is that their reduction in waste generated and the bag revenue would offset a significant amount of the tip fee, both through, you know, the revenue from the bags and the reduction in waste. But I haven't heard back as to whether any of the towns that we reached out to were willing to participate or not. We'll have to check that at the next board meeting.
Don, Farmington was one of those towns that you reached out to, and I appreciate it, and we're talking about it. But it is, like Mike said before, it's going to be very difficult to implement. And I just don't see, you know, how people are going to end up saying, okay, I'll spend $1 per bag when I can buy it for five, or, you know, whatever, 5 cents.
I know that Stonington has been pretty successful with the paper throw program, but they're a very small community. They're different. Yeah. Farmington or my town. The reason they were successful in doing it is the option was to go to paper throw or a very substantial increase in taxes to build a new facility. And so, but I think there's one or two other small communities in Connecticut who have it. Obviously, Worcester is pointed out as a model story, as is Portland, Maine. But it's very hard to get real data, and maybe the committees have, out of, you know, if you take the whole spectrum of waste generation, you know, you may reduce the solid waste, you may reduce solid waste by getting, you know, recycling textiles, et cetera. But if you take 100% of the waste today, it's all got to go somewhere unless you're really reducing the amount that's generated. And I haven't seen evidence that you're really reducing the amount generated, it's just going in different directions.
I agree. And part of the whole organics thing I thought was interesting. They put up on one of the presentations, they put up a picture of the state of Connecticut with different stars and everything on it, saying, oh, there's a facility. And that ends up being, that was their wish list. Try getting one of these things approved. As you said, who's going to want, we have a facility here in town and tried to do an organic program at his facility. And you would have thought he was doing things that, you know, it was crazy the impact that people had on a neighborhood. They thought it was going to attract, you know, wild animals and smell and stink. And he paid for his application at planning and zoning, and it was basically shot down before it even got to the meeting because of the outcry. So I just don't know where they're going to put all these facilities that are going to take the organics and things like that, let alone, you know, putting up a new burn facility. But I just, everyone to me is using these buzzwords of unit-based pricing, organic reduction, you know, the clothing, but without having the other side of it of what's the answer to it. And I don't know what the answer is, but to me, the environmental justice, I don't think is a big issue. It's a big issue, but I don't think the truth is there. Everyone, yeah, let's landfill it. Nobody wants to do that. That goes against all, you know, everything we've worked for in the past few years. I don't know. It's, we're going to be in a rocky road, I think, coming up.
Don, from Mira's perspective, is there anything that you think we could do or help with at this point?
No, I think until there's more knowns than there are unknowns, if we see legislation that's being proposed that we think is positive, we would certainly like help in getting it passed. If we see legislation that we think is not good policy, we would like help in that sort of thing. As soon as we have a little bit better insight into what the path forward looks like or what the upcoming tip fees, we'll do a community meeting. It's, Zoom is not quite as effective as gathering down at the trash museum, but it's the only thing we have right now. So we will set up something to let you know where we're at and to get, input back from the towns who are members. But at the moment, there's too many unknowns. So I would, say, let's wait to see what the commissioner is putting forward and, where we see our path forward going before we ask for help, in one direction or another.
Yeah, I think the timetable I thought was the end of December, beginning of January for the report, if I understood it correctly.
Yeah, it should be within the first 2 weeks of January.
Okay.
So I think the final report meeting is January. Let me just look at it here. They've already set it up, I know. Yeah, the final report is supposed to come out on January 5th. There's a meeting set up at 1 o'clock that day for a report out to the community or the communities.
Okay. Yeah, that probably was sent to our, I would think our town managers, et cetera, because I wasn't aware of the date, or maybe they got that on their schedule. And I don't know if they're going to do anything in the interim. If there's some, I've sat in on a few of them, but the time that it takes to sit on every one of them, I know it was an aggressive schedule, but I don't know if any of us had enough time to sit on every one of those, because they're obviously take a lot of time. And I know they're trying to cover a lot of ground in a short period of time. I get it, but it's a little bit overwhelming to try to stay in touch with every one of those meetings that they've had.
Yeah. Next overall meeting is December 16th, which is a report out by all of the working groups. And that's, I assume that's preparatory for the January meeting for the final report. So I would say if you can find out when those two, they're both at 1 o'clock, one is the 6th and one is the 16th and the other's on the 5th. Those would be the key meetings. But you might want to, reach out to Deep to get a, formal invitation.
Yeah, Kim, that's probably not a bad idea if we could confirm those to make sure all our membership at least is aware of those dates in case they weren't as involved as some of the rest of us were.
Kim can hear, but she can't, her mic is not working. So we'll get that out.
Somebody got that. Yeah, I it's probably on their website too. Like I said, I just so our group is aware of the dates in case they weren't as involved, because I'm not sure who might be getting that correspondence if you weren't that active on some of those subcommittees they had.
Yeah, James Alvis is probably the one you want to reach out to make sure that everything is getting to the right people.
Yep. Okay, does anything
else we can do for you today?
What's that?
Anything else we can do for you today?
No, you've covered it all. No, we really appreciate, I personally and the group I know, really appreciate you guys spending the time. And I think, it goes without saying that if there's anything we can do on our end, we kind of feel a little helpless, as I'm sure you do as well, at this point and going forward. But we'll this too will pass. Does anybody else have any other questions? I think that idea of Mike Payne, maybe Tom, you could talk to him and see if he's willing to, chat with us, for whatever, maybe the hauler's perspective on what's going on to get the other side of it. That might not be a bad idea. We can set up something, a Zoom meeting maybe with him.
No, I think that'd be a great idea. So, I'd be happy to set that up.
You can, yeah, chat with him and see, and we'll set up a time. Anything else for the good of the order from anybody? And again, I thank you. Thank Don and Jim both, and certainly thank Tom. I know he's here in spirit. I can feel it.
Hey, well, everybody stay well.
Oh, you too. Next
thank you, item. Don. Thank you, Jim.
You're welcome.
Next item I have was open discussion, if there is any. Seeing none, next and final item would be a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, that's it, folks. Thanks again. Thanks, Kim and Pauline. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mike.
Hey, thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.